This is Geeks and Jocks. And welcome back to Geeks and Jocks episode 190, recording on a Sunday, actually. Recording April 14th, 2024. This is Ron Sullivan. Glad to have you here. Before getting into this episode, this podcast is on podcasters.spotify.com. Find it on Radio Public and Google Podcasts. So head on down to those places, search for Geeks and Jocks. Plenty of content awaits. Definitely got some interesting things to talk about, including the Women's National Championship, amongst other things, online in general for gaming, and a couple other small things, such as the box office, as always, for this episode, and potentially looking at potential reboots on some TV shows. So let's get cracking and jump straight to BoxOfficeMojo.com for some stuff that happened last weekend. before I get to that, it's unusual for me to record an episode on a Sunday, but when you're worn out, you don't feel the need to record at times, but probably looking for down the road, probably in September or October, start doing probably Saturday podcasts instead of trying to get them out on Fridays, but definitely weekend uploads, probably going to be my main goal heading into the fall. So looking at the top 10, Three of the top 10 are new ones. So beginning with number 1 is a repeat. Godzilla and Kong, The New Empire, making $32.2 million last weekend. And its numbers as of Friday the 12th, $146.4 domestic and $226.6 internationally. So nearing $375 overall. More than likely, I mean, this is a hit, doing hugely all around. Warner Brothers probably happy with the results. Number 2 is Monkey Man, which only made $10.1 million over the weekend. Its numbers are not all that great right now. 14.9 domestic and 3.1 internationally, just barely making it to $18 million. To me, this is interesting because this is from Jordan Peele. Granted, he's not the director of the film, but he's a producer. And Universal has probably been happy with the type of movies that he's been involved in. And when you think about what Get Out did and what was like Us, I think it was called, and Nope, those have been hits. But I think also those movies dwindled down with each release. Not to the point where it's like you ring the panic alarm, but still less results. Like I said, he's not the director or writer. That actually belongs to Dev Patel, who has done his fair share of stuff over in India, which includes the that Slumdog Millionaire movie. But still, I mean, audiences, the critics liked it. I wonder if, like, fatigue is settling in terms of horror, where for a bit of time, people were enjoying what was out there for scary films, but it's just not doing it anymore. Or maybe it's just picking the wrong time, especially when you have Godzilla and Kong being out in its second weekend. Hard to tell. Number 3, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, making $9 million last weekend. sitting around at 92.5 domestic and just over 49 million, making 141.6 worldwide. Not the type of numbers they probably were expecting. I don't know how many more international markets this will be in, but probably going to fare lesser here domestically compared to Afterlife. And I know it's not, I know a few weeks ago when it came out, it was not faring well with the critics either. I don't know what the cutoff is on whether or not, if they even do make another one, what the cutoff is on whether a sequel gets greenlit or not. But overall, I'm wondering if Sony is not happy with the results. That to me, that I think it all hinges on what happens the next couple of weeks and where the final numbers lie. Number four, another new movie called The First Omen. 8.3 over the weekend and sitting at 12, just over 12 million domestic and 9 million internationally for 21 million. This movie, I had to look at the budget for it just to see what it was, and 30 million. 30 million for this film. It's kind of a similar situation with Monkey Man, but the difference with that, just before I forget, Monkey Man has a budget, looking at it from multiple sites, 10 million versus 30 mil. And this is the first big movie for Disney, from what I read, since Wish coming out back in November. That, to me, has got to be hugely depressing. So I'm going to take a look at that for a moment. First Omen. Or what was it? There's something I saw. Yeah, it's like 79% on Rotten Tomatoes, and yeah, it's just people are not impressed. Well, and maybe the fatigue as well. But who knows? Number five, Kung Fu Panda 4, 7.7 million last weekend. Still pulling in some decent numbers, 169.5 domestic and 251.9 internationally, just over 420 million. Overall, I mean, it's raking in the profits. I mean, people are liking what DreamWorks has done for Universal. Actually, I'll be talking about, briefly, just forgot about, seeing something for a new Disney Pixar film that I'm curious to see how that fares, which I'll get to in a little bit. Number six, Dune, Part 2, 7.4 million. Still pulling in decent numbers in terms of the overall worldwide. 268.9 domestic and just over 400 million internationally, nearing 670 million. So that should, I mean, obviously this is probably going to get a third one. Number seven, Someone Like You, 2.9 million over the last week. So one of those smaller films from Fathom Events, 4.2 altogether, not in many theaters. Yeah. Number eight, Arthur the King, 1.5 million over the weekend, 22.7 domestic and 3.9 internationally So nearing 27 million. Probably got, if I had to guess, another week or two before it gets pulled out of theaters. I'm just assuming. Number 9, Immaculate. 1.3 over the weekend, so another horror movie. And judging by the number of cut theaters, probably not even going to reach 25 million if I had to guess. 14.8 domestic, 5.7 internationally. And number 10, Wicked Little Letters. Some small film from Sony that was out in a couple places. 2 million overall, 16.5 internationally. I'm assuming this is one of those films that. I'm assuming it's one of those films that probably bigger in other parts of the world just isn't gonna do squat. I mean, like I said, 1.3 million in 1,000 theaters. And so, yeah. So looking at what is out right now, and there are, I don't know what exactly is wide or limited, but this is what is out for this weekend. The Long Game, The Greatest Hits, Sting, Civil War, Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, Arcadian, and that's it for wide releases. Smaller ones include Los Angel, The Genius of Judy Sill, or Judy Sill, Escape from Germany, The Absence of Eden, Leroy, Texas, and Sasquatch Sunset, which I read on a site that there was no, that or at least the headline, no dialogue for this film. From That's got an interesting cast too. Jesse Eisenberg's in it and Riley Keough. Right now, the big film that's doing some good numbers is Civil War. And odds are this is gonna be the one that leads the way over the weekend. Yeah, Long Game and Sting, that's not what I call long. Yeah, probably limited releases if I had to assume. Same with Arcadian. Yeah, I'm assuming some of those are just like small releases. So, yeah. Civil War is an interesting film. Right now, it's being well received for the most part. Not universal acclaim, but A24, I had a glimpse of looking at a site for its budget, $50 million, and that's saying something, because A24 is one of those companies that specializes in smaller budgeted films, and I think this is the type of film that probably a number of people are going to see for the next week or two. Because it creates kind of this scenario of what happens if other parts of the nation go against the government. And I think it's one of those films that will create huge paranoia, especially considering that this year is an election year and tempers are running high on both the Democratic side and the Republican side. Like the idea of what happens if something goes wrong. See if there's a description. A journey across a dystopian future America following a team of military embedded journalists as they race against time to reach DC before rebel factions descend upon the White House. I don't know what else really that can. They call it an action film, but I don't know. It's definitely gonna make some bank potentially. Now, I don't expect this to make $100 million, but it's. I think you're gonna get a lot of people to see it over the next week or two. As far as what's coming out over the course of this week, there was a UFC fight. Limited release on the 17th called The Hopeful. Now, whether these are wide or limited at the end of the day next week, so these are the name of some films. Chicken for Linda, The Ministry of Gentlemanly Warfare, Hard Miles, Villains Incorporated, Spy X Family Code, White, The Coffee Table, Abigail, which I think I've seen a few ads for online, Egoist, and Blood for Dust. Fair share of big name releases and limited. If I had to guess what the biggest film will be out of that bunch next week, I'm assuming probably the Abigail film. I'm just assuming for next week, but I would say this upcoming weekend, so from looking at the numbers, Civil War is likely going to be the number one film. And yeah. When you look at animated films, it's fascinating that Disney hasn't put out anything in quite a while, and they're probably pinning their hopes on a new Inside Out movie. This was a movie that came out, like the original came out in the summer of 2015, and it was one of their, it was kind of a shot in the arm for Disney because they had been struggling a little bit with their films. Like in between Toy Story 3 and Inside Out, their numbers weren't all that great. Cars 2 was a flop. Brave did decent. Monsters University did well, but I don't think they got the numbers that they wanted out of that film. And what was the other one? Was it Big Hero 6 or was it some other film? I forget what it was, but Inside Out, like, it was very huge. The question on this movie is there. So, looking at the description on IMDb, teenager Riley's mind headquarters is undergoing a sudden demolition to make room for something entirely unexpected. New emotions. So, the bringing back a number of cast members for that film. And this is one of those films. There's been a lot of stuff behind the scenes on whether or not there's like specific stuff going on, like trying to, they have like hidden message type crap or something like that. And I don't know how you can do a sequel to something that really probably doesn't need a sequel. Then again, we're seeing a fifth Toy Story coming out at some point, but at least Toy Story made sense. Monsters, Inc. kind of made sense to have a sequel. And a couple of other films as well. But something like this, if this is supposed to be their game changer, they better hope that whoever loved the first movie, or at least where kids are going to be enticed to see the film, but I'm not sure it'll do well. if there's no message preached upon in the film, maybe it does okay, but people just want some goofiness in stuff like what's happened with DreamWorks. They have had their fair share of hits over the last couple of years, and even Illumination, when you think about it, they scored big with Mario last year. And just thinking that for kids' films, Sonic 3 should do fairly well, and that's a live action film, mind you. Speaking of trying to rely on certain things, moving to television a little bit. So there was a thing about potential reboots for CBS. Now, supposedly, because they are so dependent on their crime shows, they are possibly looking at doing a reboot of one of their bigger crime shows of the 2000s, and that is Cold Case, which ran for 7 seasons, 03 through 2010. And there was another one potentially. This one, I'm not sure how you can do something like this, but Matlock. And that was a show that came out long ago, back at, well, like the 80s, I think. Ran from 86 through 95, starred Andy Griffith as the title character. I don't know how you can do something like that. Like, seriously, I don't know how you can do that. And this is something that has been talked about for quite a while. And this, actually, okay. These were probably pushed back because of strikes. Because there's a thing on TV Line from November of last year. A couple of shows. One included Matlock and a show called Papa's House from one of the Wayans. So, jeez, Louise, I see these promos for this show called Elsbeth. CBS must love like these doing these spin-offs because that is a Good Wife spin-off. I just, how many more of these spin-offs? And that's not including an NCIS Origins thing. Have we become too reliant on franchises to have anything original? Especially for CBS, it's like, so, and even if there's something new, if it's from like a certain creator or whatnot, it will feel like it's cut from the same cloth. Sure, some things will be different, but familiar gags, maybe some type of catchphrase that will feel similar. I just don't get it. Just why not just create something original? Like, what is so difficult to do that, you know? But I'll tell you something that I will say that you probably will never see again. And this is going to be a combination of sports and TV, but the Women's National Championship probably had the ratings that more than likely will never be replicated again. And I'm not saying that to be be like a mockery or anything like that, but there is no way you're replicating this. This is from CBS News. An average of 18.9 million viewers turned on the final, making it the most watched women's college basketball game ever, according to data from Nielsen, ESPN said Tuesday. The epic finale, which was broadcast on ABC and ESPN, peaked at 24.1 viewers in the game's final 15 minutes. Now, this is a game that South Carolina won their third title in 7 years, or 8 years. They're second and third under head coach Dawn Staley, smothering defense. Iowa, the big phenom, Caitlin Clark, had a big game, 30 points, tournament, all-time record for tournament points as well. It's all due to what Clark has done for the last couple of years, and she has been the talk of the town, and I believe the NBA, the WNBA draft is coming soon. And no doubt she'll probably be the number one pick for the WNBA. I think what helps in the case of Clark is that she's not from a college that everyone recognizes that will be always a top threat for the national championship. So let me use this for an example. If she was part of UConn, for example, I'd imagine she would still be a top pick for the draft, but nobody would watch her play, except for the diehards. For the diehards of UConn, because UConn is not a ratings grabber for college sports. And that really, that probably pisses off a lot of casuals who probably just want to watch something that resembles something close to a competitive game, but leads to a blowout. And I would argue that the ratings probably have done better over the last 8 years because UConn's not in it. You don't have Tennessee involved either. Actually, one of the biggest names for women's college sports, I think it's Tara Vanderveer. I think that's how you say her name. Vanderveer. Stepping down and retiring from being the coach of Stanford University. Something she had done for 39 years, going back to 1985. So, was she let go for a year? Whatever the case, saying, according to like ESPN and things like that, I just felt unready. Yeah, I mean, there comes a point where it's like, you still have that drive in you at points, but then that comes that wall. It's like, I feel like I'm done. Winningest coach in college, women's college basketball history. I mean, three national titles. What else can you say? Obviously, she don't have the hardware like a Gino Auriemma or Pat Summitt, but I'm sure she has mad respect for the people around her, you know, that played for her and all that. Anyway, back to that point I was going to say with it, and that's the thing, it's like women's sports, it's hard to know what exactly draws people to a women's sport that doesn't involve staring at their butts or their bodies or whatever. But the thing is, don't know if it's just the way they play, but it doesn't entice even women to watch games. And even if you go to an event yourself, they just don't draw compared to men. Now, obviously, some exceptions. I will say that. Obviously, there are exceptions. But I feel like for the most part, women's sports don't drive home, you know, the idea that people will go to these games. Even if your team is good, more than likely you're going to have people go more to the men's game of the same sport, even if they're, whether they're good or bad, people will go to them. I think it's the style of play, especially for basketball, and it just, the type of play just isn't intriguing enough to have people stay for the women's games. I'm not claiming to be an expert by any means, but it's hard for people to stay, unless you're really into the sport, it's hard for people to really stay motivated to watch, I'd say, a girls' game. One of the big surprises, men's basketball, is going to be John Calipari going to Arkansas for a 5-year deal, taking nearly his entire UK staff to Arkansas. So that ought to be interesting. So he spent the last 15 years coaching Kentucky basketball, 4-10 and 1-23 as his record. Only one national title, which surprised me because I thought he might have had at least two. And speaking of that for a brief second, UConn, first back-to-back champion since Florida in 2006 and 07. So that's great. Dan Hurley, part of that Hurley family of basketball coaches. Bobby Hurley, I believe he's coaching Arizona State still, I believe. So congrats on the Hurley family. Anyway, looking at Calipari, 5-year deal, like I said, and Kentucky signing Mark Pope to a 5-year deal. You know, it's surprising a little bit, but maybe there's some animosity behind the scenes. Because the last few years have not been kind to Calipari. And from what it sounds like, they either were one and done or they couldn't even make it to the Sweet 16. So that should give you kind of a glimpse at maybe whatever he was doing in Kentucky wasn't working the same way like it did 10 years ago. Then again, maybe there's some controversy behind the scenes because Calipari has been sanctioned before. Let's not forget about that. I believe UMass Calipari sanction. Yeah. This is from NY Times, a brief glimpse from 2015. Marcus Camby accepted large sums of cash and services, not the least the ministrations of a prostitute from a couple of scalawag agents. Fined a university $151,000 and forced the Minutemen to vacate postseason victories and the Final Four appearance. And yeah, the other one was it 14 years? I thought he coached them for 15. Impose. Yeah, Memphis. This was when This was when Derrick Rose was in Memphis, so that should kind of give you a glimpse on that his track record is not clean. It's just hard to really feel bad for the guy. I have a gut feeling that there's something behind the scenes that we probably won't know about, and I feel like the NCAA will go after Kentucky at some point. Something has to happen. I mean, if they did sanctions for Memphis and UMass, I think Kentucky will suffer the same fate. I mean, they'll be lucky if they don't have any sanctions at all. Not much going on with football, other than the passing of O.J. Simpson, who played 11 seasons in the NFL, mostly with the Buffalo Bills, including a 2,000-yard season 1 year during a 14-game season. Played his final years in San Francisco, acted in stuff, commentary, but obviously a lot of people will remember his infamous ride on the L.A. freeway, being accused of murder in 1994, the murder of his ex-wife and her lover, found not guilty, pled guilty to a robbery, and was sentenced to 33 years in jail. Let out, I think, like 5-6 years ago, I want to say. Passed away from prostate cancer. I don't imagine a lot of people will shed tears. I wouldn't either. Either especially for the stuff he did. I feel bad for the guy having cancer. That doesn't excuse him from the things that happened. There was actually another guy that passed away, NASCAR. Bob Labonte. So this is one of the more interesting things. NASCAR mourning the loss of Bob Labonte at the age of 91. This was a guy that was the father of two NASCAR champions in the form of Terry Labonte and Bobby. Terry winning it in 84 and 96. Bobby winning it in 2000, the first for Joe Gibbs Racing at that time. Crew chief for both his boys too, so I mean that's got to feel pretty special if I'm being completely honest. It's actually pretty cool. Last week's race was in Martinsville. And a 1-2-3 finish for the Hendrick Motorsports team. William Byron winning the race, his third of the year. Kyle Larson second, Chase Elliott third. Bubba Wallace, an impressive fourth place finish. Ryan Blaney fifth place. Joey Logano sixth. Tyler Reddick with a great seventh place finish. Alex Bowman eighth. Ryan Preece a good ninth place. Chase Briscoe tenth. Other notables include Denny Hamlin 11th. Eric Jones 12th. Ross Chastain 14th. Chris Buescher 15th, Kyle Busch 16th, and this is coming off of getting rid of a crew chief and replacing him with a new one. Martin Truex 18th, Ty Gibbs 19th, Noah Gragson 20th, Michael McDowell 21st, Daniel Suarez 22nd, Austin Cindric 23rd, Brad Keselowski 24th, Josh Berry 25th, Ricky Stenhouse 29th, Harrison Burton 33rd, Austin Dillon 34th, John Chris Bell, 35th, and John Nemechek, 36th. Looking at Byron, the fact he's got his third win of the year, I mean, we're close to 2 months into the season, and he's putting up a good run similar to what he had last year. Now, the 24 car has not seen a championship since Jeff Gordon back in 2001. And that was, at that time, Gordon's fourth out of the bunch that he won in 95, 97, and 98. I'm not expecting a dominant run similar to what Gordon had. However, I can see something similar to what happened with his teammate, Larson. Larson's first year with Hendrick was in 2021, 10 wins for the year, and he won the championship. And the victory was probably a special one, considering Hendrick Motorsports formed 40 years ago. And they had a guy from Chemung, New York, Jeff Bodine, leading the way. The first win was at Martinsville in April of 84. You think about some of that, I mean, Hendrick took a chance. It took a while, but once he started getting guys like to win races, and the big one being in 86 with the Daytona 500, Tim Richmond, the late Tim Richmond with some of his big wins in 86. And obviously that momentum getting bigger and bigger. And obviously getting Jeff Gordon in 93. And really, I would say the last 30 years, when you look at it all, without Jeff Gordon, you don't see Jimmy Johnson getting 7 cups. You don't see Chase Elliott and Kyle Larson getting their championships too. Let's think about it. Or Terry Labonte, for that matter. Just thinking that. Terry Labonte getting his second championship in 96. So let's look at it. 4 championships for Gordon. Jimmy had 11. Well, 7, so that's 11. Terry had 1, so 12. 14 championships within a 29-year span. That's crazy to think. I mean, Joe Gibbs has 5, 2 drivers of which had 2, Tony Stewart and Kyle Busch. Penske has 3. I'm trying to think of, like, Roush has a couple. Front Row with Martin Truex, obviously. Stuart Haas has a couple. Tony Stewart himself won his third with that. And Kevin Harvick. I actually read something that he regretted pushing Brad Keselowski in Texas late in 2014 with the scuffle that Keselowski had with Gordon. The NHL and NBA seasons are on their final games. Definitely will be looking at it next week to see what the final standings are like for the NHL. But the NBA finishes up today, or at least today and Monday. And the conferences are pretty much set for the most part. It's just a matter of who gets certain seeds in the end, because you got 6 teams in the East that have clinched spots. Boston, number 1 seed overall and number 1 seed in the East. Milwaukee, 2nd. The New York Knicks, 3rd. And the Cleveland Cavaliers, 4th amongst the rankings. The question is whether or not Milwaukee or New York gets, whether any of them get the second through fourth seed. Orlando, fifth place with in the rankings in the conference with 46-35. So is Indiana and Philadelphia. Philadelphia in the Philadelphia in the seventh seed, Miami in the eighth. Whoever wins that probably get one of the worser seeded play-in tournaments. Chicago and Atlanta have that spot. I'm going to say Boston and the Knicks have won their fair share of games recently, although they faced each other and the Knicks won. No one looks all that sharp except for Philadelphia right now. And that's with Joel Embiid back, so that should be a scary thought to have. All but two teams are set for their playoff berths in the Western Conference. Oklahoma leading the way. Minnesota and Denver with the same records, but Oklahoma with number one. LA Clippers, fourth. Dallas, fifth. New Orleans, sixth. Phoenix, seventh. LA Lakers, eighth. Sacramento, ninth. And Golden State, tenth. Golden State on a big run right now. The LA Lakers on a great run as well. Same with Dallas and the Clippers. Minnesota, like, it's not too bad. The worst is Sacramento. They've been on a losing tear recently. And the worst outside of them is New Orleans. Still, pretty good stuff when you look at it. Actually, the Warriors had a game where they scored 26 three-pointers and 5 each from Klay Thompson, Stephen Curry, and Draymond Green. So, I mean, that's a team that could scare people. I don't expect them to win the finals, though, but hey, should be an interesting playoff picture overall. One of the bigger problems, briefly heading into baseball, is arm issues due to some big-name pitchers such as Spencer Strider, Shane Bieber, with elbow issues. And the question is whether or not the pitch clock is to blame. I don't know. I think having two less seconds, it's rushing it too far, and then they wonder why fans grow restless at the stuff that they're trying to do. It worked great last year. Why make changes to something that, you know, seemed effective? Why not let it mature as time goes on? But it's going to be a long battle. It's going to be I know the games take forever, but there has to be other ways to cut down on time taken at these games. It's going to be a long battle. So lastly, talk about gaming as a whole with digital platforms. And recently there was the shutdown of the Nintendo 3DS and the Wii U. So this happened almost a week ago on the 8th. Online play and other functionality that uses online communication was discontinued for the Nintendo 3DS and Wii U software. This is something that Nintendo announced about a year in advance, maybe a little longer. And I'm not surprised with the Wii U because that system was a complete failure. Complete failure. Even though it was out for about 4 years, nobody bought the damn thing. I mean, I'm surprised they even still had online stuff 7 years later. 3DS is a little surprising because it, even though it had been discontinued around 2019, 2020, you think that this being really the last true handheld, it would still have a little more life left on its digital services, but no. You think you'd let it go for like another couple of years, but unfortunately. And this is going into sort of a thing that has been seen going back to the late 90s. Actually, there has been this incentive to bring back online functionality to certain systems. And I was really looking at anything online going back to the 90s. And one of the first big ones, it was X-Band. So what is X-Band, you might say? Or might ask. I gotta learn to say that in the form of a question. I'll take how to answer a question for 200. Sorry. X-Band is a online service that was used from the end of 1994 into early 1997 for the Sega Genesis and Super NES. It didn't have many games utilizing it. I don't think either side had 10 games each for it. A couple Maddens, NBA Jam, think Weapon Lord, which was a fighter. I know Doom had X-Band support because someone tried doing that, I think, online or something like that. But this was something that over the last couple of years, people have been trying to revive the whole thing. There's some stuff from 2020, Doom World talked about it. There's a website, Time Extension, see what that has. Yeah, it's like a big project, people trying to get. Because it used like a phone line, I believe. If you remember the days of dial-up, welcome back to 1995. I remember those days. Not with Sega Genesis, obviously, but Windows 95, the. Man, I miss Windows 95. So it's basically, yeah, paperweight, the X-Band. But there's been some people online last year that have been trying to work with getting it to work again. And yeah, I'm sure people would love to try playing online with the very few Genesis games and Super NES games that utilized the X-Band. Obviously, emulation is there too with the NetPlay, to where you can do that on a computer, but to do something like this with an X-Band, forgot Mortal Kombat had X-Band on support. I'd like to see someone try to do the Sega Channel, if I'm being honest, try to. Or at least someone that maybe recorded footage in the mid-90s, try to find some of these things that were on there and try to get footage of certain things or promos back then, because there's certain things that are lost in time due to the functionality of Sega Channel. But to that point, there has been this push over the years to bring back online functionality, and there is a beta in development for a thing called Pretendo. And they're trying to work on it right now with the purpose of restoring the online functionality of the Wii U and the 3DS to where, probably if I had to assume, private servers to where you can play a game of Smash Brothers or play something that utilized, you know, for a game like Splatoon, open source Nintendo Network replacement that aims to build custom servers. And this is something that has grown a lot more in recent years. This, I mean, it's one of those things like PS2. The support ended in 2012 in terms of development and third-party stuff, 2016. Xbox, 2010. Actually, I'm going to look at Dreamcast, see if online revival, see if that has anything. Because some people will go out of their way to get the Dreamcast reviving, and hobbyists have revived. Because I think like Phantasy Star is one of the big things. Yeah. Trying to look for other stuff. So let's see the supported games, actually. There weren't that much, if I remember correctly. Yeah, like, trying to find ones that aren't, like, Capcom versus SNK, Daytona, Heavenly's, no, 100 Swords, Marvel versus Capcom 2, obviously the NBA 2Ks and the NFL 2Ks. Did the NHL get... No NHL. That's Phantasy Star Online. That was a big deal. Power Stone 2, Quake 3, that was a big deal. Especially if you had the keyboard and mouse. Some Street Fighter stuff. Virtua Tennis. So not a lot. That is surprising. Initially allowed free access to their games, the exception of cost offsetting, expectations of cost offsetting through SegaNet subscriptions, charging a monthly fee throughout the existence of its official servers. There are some private servers still online that are playable with the following games. Phantasy Star stuff, Quake, Next Tetris, Sonic Adventure had online? The sports stuff. I mean, this is what people want. People want to play online. That's the thing. People want to still build this niche group of people together and have a blast playing some of these older games. Now, obviously, as time goes on, and this is one of the big negatives that, you know, that comes with PC, and that's not being able to keep things secure, and that's why a number of online games shutter down, you know, leaving only single player. So let's say I want to play Medal of Honor Allied Assault. I can't do the multiplayer. Now, is there maybe a custom server? I wouldn't be surprised if there is. But is it worth the risk, though, on your computer? That to me is the biggest question. Now, obviously, this is going to keep getting bigger and bigger in terms of custom servers for many things. The Wii was a big one. The PSP, DS. Obviously, people trying to do stuff with the PS2 and the original Xbox. The fact that the original Xbox has like a third-party company trying to revive the online overall for that system, that speaks dividends. I'm curious to see what happens over the next couple of years with the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3, because those systems are still going with their online capabilities. With the 360 store shutting down in July, how much time will there be left for that system in particular, and will Sony follow suit with the PS3 and the Vita? PS3 is the only system right now currently still going that allows free online. It's a matter of time, like I said before, that gets shut down as well. It's a shame to see some of these games lose their functionality. It has to happen at some point. I mean, that's the nature of the beast. As much as I hate to say that, you know, you gotta make sure, you know, at some point, if it doesn't feel secure enough, you gotta shut it down, or if there's not enough reason or not enough people to really keep the system going, I mean, gets to that point. So, but yeah, Pretendo, I would wait and see what happens over the next year or two, see how that goes, but I'd imagine they're going to do whatever they can to get some of the big name titles. I mean, Splatoon was a big one. I wonder if they'll try doing anything with, like, Super Mario Maker. That actually has me curious, because you could create your own levels and things like that. Kind of like Little Big Planet on the PlayStation line of systems, creating levels and all that. That, to me, I can't wait to talk more about that down the road. Can't wait. So I'll end it here. Like I said before, this podcast is on podcasters.spotify.com. You can also find this on Radio Public and Google Podcasts. So head on down to those places. Search for Geeks and Jocks. Plenty of content awaits. So with that is episode 190. This is Ryan Sullivan. Hope to hear listeners on the next podcast. Stay safe, stay protected, take care of yourself, take care, everyone.